Covered in Glory is presented for the people by Caesars Sportsbook, the greatest sports betting app of all time. Download it, must be 21 years or older. Welcome back to another edition of Covered in Glory. Brett, it is one of the least productive weeks of the entire year. Who the heck works on a Wednesday? Who the heck works on Friday when Thanksgiving is Thursday? And Omaha actually gave us the option to take this show off, but the slate of games was just too good. I'm hoping we could use it as kind of like a floating holiday the next time that Arsenal and Burnley is the best match of the entire weekend. But we are here after the international break to catch you up and to go over not one, but two top of the table clashes across Europe. How excited are you, Brett?
I'm always excited when international break is over and soccer's back, mostly because I hate that there's an international break. So it's more like I just start losing the low-lying angst that I have for international break and just like regain the excitement of the club season being back.
Yeah, and look, this one was particularly strange, right? Because one, we entered the international break on like one of the best games of, I don't know, 1 year, 2 years, 3 years. How far back do we want to go to talk about that City-Chelsea game? And we could break it down a little bit more. But when you like leave the experience of watching that game, you don't want to not watch soccer for another 2 weeks. You want it to continue for the, you know, immediately upon the end of the final whistle. So to sit through the international break after that was particularly cruel. But two, most of the news that happened during the international break was off the soccer pitch, and it wasn't overly positive, particularly for an Everton fan such as yourself. So as soon as the news broke, you texted me a 10-point deduction for financial foul play for anybody who missed the story. Everton has gone from, you know, kind of in the zone of safety to immediately into a relegation contender. And there are ripple effects throughout the league based on this precedent. So, Brett, as an Everton supporter, nominally, even though you're really a Seagull supporter. How did you react to it? And what do you think is going to be the impact on this league we love so much?
I laughed. So that's my initial reaction is I laugh because the thing is this has been, and Gam Arcadi did a great write up on this for ESPN. But the thing is this is getting compared to like the City stuff and the Chelsea stuff. And really essentially, and this is from my limited understanding, I'm not a very smart guy here, but essentially what happened is Everton just spent way too much money. And they just completely overshot the bounds of financial fair play. So they've like cooperated. This isn't like the City stuff where they're just basically like, hey, we're doing a bunch of shell games with like ghost corporations that are tied to shady people and not going to show you anything in that ongoing investigation within the Premier League. This is Everton being like, our new ownership group just wanted to just keep spending money to try to make us to be good. And we spent way too much money and just pure incompetence drove us into financial fair play regulations. And so now here we are, minus the 10 points. I think it's going to probably get appealed. I'm assuming it's going to get appealed. The question is, though, and with situations like this, is obviously this investigation took so long that the points deduction happened early in this season, or relatively early in this season. And of course, there are three Premier League teams from last year now playing in the championships that have to be mighty pissed off that investigation didn't move a little bit faster, because that would have put Everton in the relegation zone last year and cost those teams millions and millions of dollars. So you get all this like weird, complicated stuff that's going on with this. But I mean, the thing that made me laugh the most is like, Everton wasn't trying to be super shady. They weren't trying to hide things. They were cooperating with the investigation. They just were insanely stupid and ran afoul of these violations, and now it's putting them in a relegation fight.
I think they got exactly what they deserved, because any team that both models themselves as finishing sixth guaranteed and hires Frank Lampard deserves the death penalty. Like, you can't be both. You can't say Frank is our manager, and if we don't finish sixth, then we're going to face a point deduction. That is absolute suicide by math. And I guess the thing that concerns me here, Brett, is like the whataboutism, right? Because as you mentioned, this is one of the more mild things that you could get busted for. And having a 10-point deduction for this calls into question all sorts of future ramifications. And so I guess one, as someone who's probably like trolling the Everton boards a little bit, is there a sense this is going to get overturned on appeal? And if it doesn't, if this actually stands, should we be looking at gambling markets for City and Chelsea and other futures and acting on this information? Because if they're getting a 10-point deduction, what's going to happen to teams that have been accused of juicing more than they have?
Yeah, I mean, that the tough part is like, I don't know when those investigations will ever wrap up. I mean, you're the guy with the law background here. I cannot imagine the amount of things that are going into these investigations with these high-powered clubs. And according to Gab Marcotti's piece, like Chelsea is basically self-reporting stuff from the Abramovich era. So I don't know.
They've already done it and they already paid a fine. Like it's a completely different thing. It's like cooperating with the government versus telling the government to screw off and flipping them the finger. You're going to get a different result.
Yeah. And that's essentially what City's doing right now. So I don't know. I mean, there's so much weird stuff. And I mean, you know, Everton is clearly not backed by, you know, a state sovereign wealth fund. So I don't know like the geopolitical dynamics that could go into this. But the interesting thing about this is the timing is last year. There were, you know, Leicester was like, they had talented players when they went down. They were clearly having a bad season. They were dealing with some injuries. They got a little unlucky and they were playing poorly. But like, if there was ever a year, Toby, for Everton to just suddenly get thrust into a relegation fight, don't you think it's a season where their main competition is Luton Town, Burnley, and Sheffield United teams that are clearly outclassed in the Premier League right now?
Yeah, I mean, that's where it gets interesting, because if you look at the future odds, to stay up right now, Arsenal is minus 280, and to get relegated, I think they're like plus 200. So this is like this weird thing where you can actually start betting a little bit on the outcome of an appeal, and we're talking about an organization and a sport and a governmental body structure that is uniquely horrible at getting things right retrospectively. Like, they cannot figure out if somebody is offsides. They cannot figure out
players. I don't know what you're talking about.
VAR, and now suddenly they're going to like look backwards and figure out last year's relegation or like what should happen this year. Like, there is zero chance this ends cleanly. So I think that the market is pricing in a little bit that 10-point might get reversed and that Everton will have a flight to safety. That's what that minus 280 implies. Because I don't know. I mean, like, as a Everton supporter, are you confident right now if the 10-point stands that at minus 280 they'll stay up when they're only at 4 points through 12 match days?
Yeah, I mean, the weird thing is like their underlying numbers are just better this year. Like, they're a better team. Like, if Frank Lampard was managing this team, I would think Everton is in serious risk of being relegation just based on where they're at in the table and the points deduction. If appeal doesn't hit, like, I'd be like, oh, they're screwed. But they were playing like an upper mid-table team. And like that going against some historically bad bottom of the table teams, it just becomes a math game of where they're going to be able to chip up points in the cases that Sheffield, Burnley, and Luton Town won't. And I mean, also Bournemouth is terrible. So they have another like horribly bad team in front of them. So I think it's pricing in those two things. They're going to pick up points at a rate faster than a typical relegation team would. There is a chance that these 10 points gets deducted to maybe what, like 6 on an appeal process. Then they pick up 4. Then they're clear favorites to avoid relegation. So I think there's a lot of things that play in this line, and you might be able to find some value, but it's so complicated. I don't really know like what information is the right one to bet on.
Well, if we're getting deep into speculation, I don't think it's going to be a reduction from 10 to 6. I think it needs to be 10 or 0 and like start making the remuneration a fine or something else, like something in the transfer market. Because once you introduce point deductions for a single instance, what the hell are they going to do to City? City has 115 instances. Like, are they going to deduct them 1,000 points? Like, what can you even do? So I think you can't just like say, okay, it's now going to be half of that. Cause like, it's like, Chris Voss said, the guy who writes about negotiation, when you're like talking about negotiating for hostages, you can't split the difference. It can't be like, okay, you got four guys, you kill two of them, and then you give me two back and we'll call it even. Like, that's two deaths. Like, once there's points in here, we're screwed. It can't be, the difference between 5 and 10 is not material. The difference between 0 and 10 is world changing. So I think it's going to get back down to zero. I think that a team that has Middle Eastern ties has clearly gained advantages in the world of soccer. I think Manchester City is going to find some way to skate on this out without any point deductions and only have to pay money as a result of any settlement. And I don't see how the Everton result could stand. And that could also be true. Like, I don't think a world where both of those things happen can exist. And so I would bet on the money. I would bet on the Middle Eastern ties. I would bet on soccer doing the right thing for the wrong reasons and Everton eventually getting these 10 points back.
So here's my question to you as someone, I mean, I know you're clearly not doing like soccer financial law, but I mean, just given the nature of these two high powered entities going at it, like, what is a timeline for something like this? I mean, this is something again, I'm putting you on the spot for something that you don't clearly are not working in sports finance law or anything, but like, what would you guess would be the timeline for an appeal process to go through and then have a verdict be reached? Would we see it before the end of the season? Could it be something that drags on into the summer?
I mean, that's the other problem here. Now you set a precedent for the endpoint of a reasonable review period. And so, like, if Everton had these violations and it took them, I don't know how long this has been adjudicated. I don't know if it's 6 months, 3 months, 12 months, 9 months. I don't remember the exact details, but the Manchester City stuff leaked out before even the Everton stuff leaked out. So how could one process take, 6 months, let's call it, and the other one goes on for multiple years? There's got to be some levels of fairness here. And of course, everybody's just going to throw lawyers and billable hours after this. And as usual, the guys in the suit and ties are the ones that are only the ones who are going to really win here because they get paid by the minute. And that's it. But overall, like, I don't see a world where it can go on and on forever. I mean, like, obviously delay, delay, delay is the tactic of the day. We're seeing it in the US political process right now, but I think they're going to have to come to a conclusion, or they're going to have to let Everton skate with nothing but a fine. Like, Chelsea already paid a fine for some of their violations. A fine is set up as precedent already, and to have a point reduction for a single instance over $20 million because they missed budget and made a couple stupid things, this is too big. It's just too big of like something to introduce into the universe and then try to play the whataboutism around it. And so, City is plus 200,000 to get relegated right now. They're plus 200,000. And so, like, is there a world in which they try to actually clean up soccer and say, okay, well, Everton got 10 points. You guys get the death penalty. Go back to league, three or four, whatever it might be. 2001. That sounds about right. That sounds about fair odds to me. This sounds about like when Iron Man is staring at Doctor Strange and asking how many versions of the world and how many times they win. That's what this feels like, but you could actually bet on it. So a $5 bet on soccer doing the right thing pays $10,000. I wouldn't spend that money, but this is a fun bet to hold.
Yeah, I mean, because like I think the fun part about holding that ticket is just like you're rooting for morality. Yeah, you're making a positive bet on ethics and morality, which I think is like better than any bet that you could ever really make. So I'm with it, man. I like this. I might sneak over and put like a dollar on it.
I also don't know how they handle it if the decision comes down in like April or May. Because, like, obviously in November, it affects things differently than if it does at the end of the season in a manner like that. But you just open up a whole new can of lawsuits by delaying it artificially. So I think as it reaches its finality, and as I said, they've set a precedent for the review period now, they're going to have to act. And if that's in April, I mean, all freaking heck is going to break loose. And so, like, also, like, Arsenal, Liverpool, plus 400, plus 500 to win the league. Like, you don't need City to get a death penalty in order for those bets to cash. You need them to be treated just like Everton was just treated. They only got a, 10, 20 point deduction, whatever it might be. They're not going to win the league. And so, like, speculating on Arsenal or Liverpool to win the league in that situation is another way that you could hopefully cash some bets on this.
Yeah. I mean, That's God, what a mess.
Yeah.
I don't really have anything to say. It's just such a bizarre world we live in. And we get to experience though. That's the best part about having this podcast. We get to sit here and just revel in the bizarreness of it all and maybe find a way to make a little money on top of it. So
all right. Well, let's get off the pitch and let's get on it because we really do have a great slate of games. So let's give Caesar some love and then come back with this week's action.
You know, when the conversation turns tampers, I always go with my number one as Caesars. Let's talk about them a little bit, shall we? Tickets to the game, merch, meals at iconic restaurants, stays at Caesars Palace. All this can be yours when you bet with Caesars Sportsbook. Win or lose, every bet earns rewards credits, which you can redeem across the empire. Now, if you haven't started yet, register using this code. Listen up, Omaha Full. The word Omaha and the word full. And then you place your first bet up to $1,250. If you win, great. If you keep those winnings, but if you lose, you'll get your stake back as a bonus bet. 21 and over only. Offer valid and must be physically present in Arizona, Colorado, Illinois, Indiana, Iowa, Kansas, Louisiana, Massachusetts, Maryland, Michigan, New Jersey, New York, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Tennessee, Virginia, West Virginia, and Wyoming. New users and first $10 plus wager only. Must register with eligible promo code. Bet amount of qualifying wager returned only if wager is settled as a loss. Maximum bonus bet, $1,250. Bonus bet expires 14 days after receipt. Tier credits and reward credits will be added to account within 7 days after qualifying wager settles. See caesars.com/promos for full terms. Void where prohibited. Know when to stop before you start. Gambling problem? Arizona, call 1-800-NEXT-STEP. Colorado, Wyoming, Kansas, affiliated with Kansas Crossing Casino, call 1-800-522-4700. Indiana, call 1-800-9-WITH-IT. Iowa, call 1-800-BETS-OFF. Louisiana, call 1-877-770-STOP. Licensed through Horseshoe, Bossier City, and Harrah's, New Orleans. Massachusetts, call 1-800-327-5050 or visit gamblinghelplinema.org. Michigan, call 1-800-270-7117. Illinois, Maryland, New Jersey, Tennessee, Virginia, West Virginia, Ohio, Pennsylvania, affiliated with Harrah's, Philadelphia. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem, crisis counseling and referral services can be accessed by calling 1-800-GAMBLER or West Virginia, 1-800-GAMBLER.net. New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369.
All right, we are back, and Brett, the league is embracing us right away with a top-of-the-table clash. We have Manchester City first at 28 points versus Liverpool second at 27 points. This game is Saturday at 7:30 a.m. I cannot believe they put one of the premier fixtures of the entire year as the lunchtime game after an international break, but here we are. Caesars has City at minus 145, Liverpool is plus 340, the draw is plus 320. City minus half a goal is minus 150, pool is plus 120. So, Brett, I've kind of got two things here. One, for a top-of-the-table clash, why am I not more excited? Why was I so much more jazzed up for, like, when City was taking on Arsenal or City versus Chelsea or whatever it might be? Is this just, like, being downstream of taping on a Tuesday and the game's not till Saturday and I'll get more excited throughout the week? Is this just Thanksgiving's in the middle of it and therefore it doesn't have my full attention yet? Or is this a reflection of these clubs in this season that this isn't the barn burner that it has been in the past 2 or 3 years?
I think for me, the way I would look at it is, we spent an entire year last year where everything revolved around City and Arsenal. And it's kind of, and every other team completely flew off the radar. United wasn't a serious threat. Liverpool fell apart. Chelsea fell apart. Like, Spurs were a mess. You name it, whatever. It was just a two-team thing. So I think, like, that's the bizarre thing to kind of come back to is, like, we're used to these two-horse races. And now it's like, so who is City's foe this time? And we're getting used to this fact that, like, oh, it's Liverpool again now, maybe, and Arsenal. And, you know, who knows? Maybe Spurs continue to their lucky streak and go.
You're with me till that.
Well, I'm just saying the point totals say that they're only three behind or two behind, and they could still continue to get lucky. We've seen weirder things happen. But the point is like, I think we've been looking at City through this lens of, like, it's a mano-a-mano duel with one team for the title. And now we actually have a three-way title race because Liverpool seems to be back. I mean, they have the second best expected goal differential per 90. They've reinforced their midfield, which was their key like demise with the fall off last year. So I think for me, it's more like getting my head wrapped around a City game against like two teams mattering again, you know, instead of just City waiting for City to play the one team that they're in this race with. That to me might be maybe where you're feeling that is like, it's weird to think that there's another team now that's going to have to battle City for a title.
Well, I guess like after international breaks, I somewhat revert back to my original feelings. I've shared that before and I'm sharing it again now. Like you get away from 2 weeks and you get away from prisoner of the moment stuff and you can think more about like what are your deep-sided beliefs about an individual team. And I just cannot believe a team playing McAllister at holding and TAA at right back is defensively sound enough to run a full campaign that's going to finish in the 95 to 100 points necessary to topple City. And so like as they haven't addressed those things, as those problems seem to continue to manifest themselves in the games that I watch, I just don't think over the 38 games that they're going to be able to win this title race. And therefore, this doesn't feel like a true title clash. So I think your point is correct. I have not adjusted that this is something that might determine who hosts the trophy this year, because I think Liverpool is going to qualify for the Champions League. But I do think Arsenal is the more serious contender to take this down to May.
Yeah, I mean, I can understand that too. And I mean, Liverpool has also been really good, but really up and down, right? So we've seen really good performance from them, and we've seen them get a little bit unlucky and then draw Luton Town 1-1, right? So like they don't have the look of that three-year stretch where they were really looking like City's equal, especially in the style that they played. They went from being, like Liverpool went from being this heavy metal team to the Van Dijk era with Fabinho in front of him and Thiago coming in to just being this like controlling, suffocating team that looked like they had control of every match. This Liverpool team is good, but they're good in a different way in the sense that they are just all over the map. These matches are everywhere. That control of the game is gone. Alexis McAllister is playing at a six. They're trying to jam a bunch of attackers on the pitch. Like, they can still be good and they still may be in this all the way, but I think they're in it all the way. It's going to be a roller coaster instead of that steady straight line up that it was during their peak years, a couple of years ago. So I think that's part of the thing too with this Liverpool team that's hard to expect is like, we are not used to seeing a team in the Premier League because City was like this, a dominating, you know, the Thanos joke that we've always made about City. They're just inevitable. Liverpool was like that when they were winning with Van Dijk and Fabinho and they were suffocating teams. We're not used to seeing like a team that might challenge for a title that is just going to like wax a good club 4-0 and then draw Luton Town in the next week and have.
And I still think a team like that can win a title. Because I just don't think the team like that can win a title in this modern age just because dropped points versus Luton Town, you can't ever make up. And so like the teams that are winning titles recently, Liverpool's, the Cities, even, you know, the Chelsea's, and this is where Chelsea's gone most astray. It's like they took care of Luton Town. They took care of Burnley. Like that was an automatic six as soon as the fixtures drop. But when you have teams that could easily, you know, drop 2 to 3 points against minnows, they just can't get in totality to that finish line. They can make the Champions League, but when the other machines just continue to roll and they don't drop those six against Luton Town or they don't drop those four against Sheffield, the math just kicks in and you can't keep up. The winning totals are too high now for that amount of variety to allow for you to win over the campaign.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the pushback I would have on that would be this: most of the time that you see those types of steady, powerful teams play each other, you get these coin flip matches that end like we just saw in the Chelsea one in a draw. Now that was a really wild match, but most of the City Chelsea matches when Tuchel was there were like that. The City Arsenal matches have all been like really close and been decided on deflected goals and all kinds of things. This could be a thing where like this Liverpool team can draw a club like Luton Town. Again, they're unlucky in that game in terms of the quality of chances, but they could also come in and they could beat the City team 3-1. And I'm not sure that I would be all that surprised by that outcome. Like their peaks and valleys could cancel out in different ways. So I'm not sure. We've never really seen this. We've never seen a team that's put up this type of underlying numbers that's been this volatile before. So I'm just kind of strapping in being like, what's going to happen, man? This could be awesome.
What, did you learn anything about that City team from that wild draw with Chelsea?
Well, I mean, they could clearly get up the gas pedal or put their foot on the gas instead of trying to control games. They had to score four to keep even. So that could be the same with Liverpool too, as maybe this is a team that challenges them to win in a different way.
Maybe. Okay. Well, it sounds like you're going to go with Liverpool in the over if I was to speculate. I am continuing to back City. City at minus 145 at home against this volatile Liverpool team. I'm taking the number. I'm a little concerned about Haaland's injury that he suffered in the international break, but it's at least in the press, it sounds like he's going to be available on Saturday morning. But because we're taping this on Tuesday and we're so far from the lineups getting announced, I am speculating a little bit that he will play, because if it's an Alvarez led line, like, I would want more value than minus 145. I would want that to get down to closer to even to feel like it best reflects the personnel available, especially when Ederson is in doubt as well. Stones is out. Rodri withdrew from international duty. And if Rodri and Haaland and Stones are all out, then like, I'm going to switch to the Liverpool side. But with what I know on Tuesday, with what I know about these two teams, and with my unwavering belief in the quality of City, and my somewhat skepticism still hanging out at Merseyside, I'm going to take that 145 on the money line.
Yeah, I mean, well, you called it. I didn't get to the over. My bets are kind of like a hedge for this match. So I am betting the Liverpool money line at plus 340, because you've always talked about this too. When ranges of outcome can be all over, like, take the bigger plus number in a lot of ways. And so this is certainly a thing where Liverpool's kind of newfound style can easily lead them to a win once out of every three matches, and you're getting a little bit of juice on top of that. But my hedge of this is pool to lose the lead in after leading in the first half at plus 750. So I couldn't really make my full decision. Like, I'm betting the money line, but I also can see a world where Liverpool gets up 1-0, 2-1, something like that, and ends up drawing or losing the game. And that plus 750 number for that outcome just seemed really good. So it seems like it obviously is a little bit of a competing bet with taking the money line, but like, seven times out of one, you don't see Liverpool getting up in this match and then drawing or losing the match by the end. Like, I don't know.
Oh, okay, wait. So that bet resolves at the end of the match. I thought the way you described it, they just lose the lead. Like, if it becomes 1-1 in the 48th minute, your bet cashes, which I was going to be flabbergasted by. So this is basically our City to come from behind to win or draw. It's plus 700 is what you're saying.
Yeah, so it's City to – it's technically the technical bet is pool to lead at half and not win. So if they're leading at half and then they end up drawing or losing the match, it's plus 750. And that outcome to me does not seem like a 7-1 thing. That to me is like a 3-1, 4-1 type of outcome with the way that Liverpool play.
Well, given how sure of it you were in your explanation, I really hope it shows up in your 5-pint. There were a series of ones I liked here. I always like any time I can get a plus number on Haaland score and City to win. That's plus 131 this week. City score in the first 30 minutes, which is opposite of your bet, since you think Poole might be able to jump out early on them. They've scored in the first 30 minutes, 5 out of the last 6 matches. There's been a lot of penalty equity in there, but it is something that's happening early and often for City as they jump on people right from the opening whistle. And Manchester City to lead at 60 minutes is minus 120. So consider this the Ederson bet. If you like City to win this matchup, but you're concerned Ederson might choke it out at the end, you can get it at the 60-minute mark and not have to worry about the last 30 minutes and how he might rear his ugly head yet again. I also like Alvarez at plus 188, whether Haaland's in the lineup or not, because Van Dijk and Xhaka, I pay so much attention to Haaland, and Alvarez is particularly deadly, also very active on free kicks. So a lot of good prop market plays there. As I said, it's Tuesday. We don't know exactly who's going to be available, but I'm betting as if City's going to be at least close to full strength with Rodri and Haaland. If you check the lineups and those guys are out, then bang every Liverpool bet you can.
Yeah, especially Rodri. Like, it doesn't seem like it because he's just a defensive midfielder and you don't see the goal total or the assist total go away. but a lot of metrics that are out there that really smart people are coming up with that calculate like total on pitch, on ball value have Rodri as one of those valuable players in the world. We also saw the example of what City looked like when he doesn't play. He is a huge foundational piece for them. That is a big, big, big miss, despite the fact that he does not have Haaland's goal total attached to him.
Yeah, I mean, like, it's funny that you bring up spreadsheets. Like, why do we need advanced stats when he leaves the lineup and they lose to Wolves? Like, bury the math, throw away the computer. That's all I need to know to see how valuable he is. All right, let's go to the other side of that wild 4-4 draw and get to Chelsea, because they're taking on Newcastle this week, who's 7th at 20 points. Chelsea is 10th at 16 points. This game is Saturday at 10 a.m. Heck of a doubleheader to start your match day weekend. Chelsea is plus 165. Newcastle is actually favored at plus 155 over at Caesars. The draw is plus 240. Newcastle minus half a goal is plus 135, and Chelsea is minus 180 on the double chance. So, Brett, I've obviously got some thoughts, but what have you learned about Chelsea after they played two of the craziest Premier League games of recent memory somehow in back-to-back weeks?
What have I learned, Toby? XG comes for everybody, and this time it's propelling Chelsea up. I just kind of learned that this is the reason why you trust in predictive metrics that have proven to be fairly accurate, you know, obviously in context over the years. Is this is the performance against City to me was not surprising, despite some of the early results, despite some of the Pochettino being fired things after some ugly displays. This team was producing great underlying numbers, and then they played the best team in the league and they went toe to toe with them. And it wasn't fluky. It wasn't weird. It was a punch for punch type of game. So that to me was what my takeaway was. Like, this is why, as a bettor or as someone who follows the sport, you know, closely and loves it, this is why you have faith. This is why front offices need to use this stuff to make rational decision-making. Is this team was the same team that everybody thought was terrible and Pochettino was washed and going to get fired, was the same team that just went punch for punch with City. So, like, that's my takeaway from it.
Well, my takeaway is the same as it always is, unfortunately. The spectrum of the quality of Chelsea's play is directly proportional to the spectrum of quality of the teams they play against. If they play great teams, they play great. If they play bad teams, they play bad. They don't ever bring the hammer down on a bad team like 4-5-0. I guess they've done it a couple times in the recent past, but they can beat anyone and lose to anyone on any given day, which is not the way the championships are created. They also really need the mentality that prevents that from happening. They had that in the John Terry days, that they had that in the Diego Costa days in the mid 2010s. And I want to see who's going to step up and set the standard a little bit higher against bad teams. Because when you watch them play the Spurs, when you watch them play City, when you watch them play Liverpool, like, they look like one of the best 10 teams in the entire world. And they have that buried within them. They have it ready to be unearthed. And somehow they let themselves slip up when they play Brentford and lose 2-0. So I think it is amazing to see what is inside all of that, like clay, like the Michelangelo that is awaiting once they get out the chisel and get rid of some of this fat and bad mentality against bad teams.
Yeah, I mean, I think some of that might just be the way that we look at the finishing variance and kind of tell a story with it. But I mean, if we're talking about a bad team, did you see the lineup that Newcastle trotted out against Bournemouth and that just got waxed with?
Yeah.
Now, they're gonna look at the front of Newcastle's jersey. They're not going to see each individual player, but like Lewis Milley started that game with Joe Willock. Anthony Gordon was playing through the center. Joel Linton got moved back to the forward line. Matt Ritchie made an appearance off the bench for him. Email crafted, and I honestly didn't even realize he was still on Newcastle until he got subbed into that match. And Bournemouth worked this Newcastle team. So with these injuries that Newcastle is facing, this is actually Chelsea playing a bad team. You could legitimately look at that Bournemouth-Newcastle match and have a debate about who had the better players. So I'm wondering if Chelsea is going to come in and look at this Newcastle team like they are gearing up for a good team, and then they get this watered down Newcastle lineup, and what's going to happen. But that's why I'm taking them on the money line.
Yeah. Well, at least allegedly, and again, we're taping this Tuesday, so all of our analysis, please confirm the lineups come out. But allegedly, Almiron and Isak are going to be back for this match to make it a fair fight. And it's actually advantageous to Chelsea for that news to leak early in the week so they can prepare accordingly as if they're going to play a team that's in the Champions League position and not, you know, the backup to the backups that they rolled out last week. So I think because that's leaked out, I don't worry quite as much about what you said, but of course I'm still taking them on the money line given what we've seen from them recently. Getting Reece James back has made such a freaking massive difference. Like, Doku did almost nothing against the right side when James was back out there, and like, he is truly world class. I know I'm in the bag for him, but if we could extend him out to 90 minutes instead of, you know, first at 30 and now 60 to 65, and having a world class player makes a massive difference. And because that's something Chelsea's had great players, they've had expensive players, but they haven't had as many world-class players in recent years, and he certainly qualifies. Cole Palmer might be on his way. He's the star boy. He's only 21. He's been a huge difference as well, interchanging with Reece. And we got Nkunku coming back maybe even as soon as this match, which is going to create a bit of a lineup congestion, because I don't even know what you do with Gallagher when Nkunku comes back, or Palmer. So these guys seem undroppable, but that guy's definitely going to make his way into the lineup. So I guess maybe it just depends on who they play. And Gallagher, I mean, Gallagher is arguably our player of the season right now and is regaining deity status. Like, maybe he's not our Lord and Savior. Maybe he's just like a minor Roman god, like the god of stamina and pressing. But either way, he is certainly regaining some of the status that I held him in the past. And so until Newcastle suddenly has a bunch of reinforcements show up from Saudi Arabia in January, I think Chelsea clearly outclasses them. And I think 165 is excellent value on the money line.
Yeah, I mean, the thing I'm going to add to that is you mentioned Cole Palmer, and that's my anytime goal scorer pick at plus 300. He's taking penalties for Chelsea now, and the weird thing about this Newcastle team is it's really hard to find a Champions League team that's not very proactive, and in most of their big matches or against teams that are more aggressive, they are more than fine without the ball. And so I also want Reece James to be healthy and out there, because I need balls into the penalty area. I need arms to get hit, hands to get hit. Palmer could definitely score from open play, but give me that penalty equity and that plus 300, because that's where it's going.
Yeah, and Sterling looks completely reborn, and Mudryk as well. Like, if these guys with their speed and their shiftiness are going to be running at dangling legs in the penalty box, whoever the penalty taker is for Chelsea is going to have value at his number. And plus 300 for a guy who's 4-for-4 and continues to slide home. And by the way, like, has had many good opportunities from open play as well. He's not just like a penalty merchant. I love that bet, and I think that's great value. Unofficially, I'm playing another value on the prop market. Reece James at plus 800 as an anytime goal scorer is comically too high. He had an amazing free kick against City. He would have scored if he was still in the game when Malagusto was free in on Ederson and sent the ball into the 12th row. Like, James buries that 9 out of 10 times. And he's got Palmer to slip him in on overlaps. A goal is coming for Reece, and he should not be 8-to-1 at this point. Like, I'm not saying he should be 1-to-1 or 2-to-1, but you are getting value. If you make that a portfolio bet and you bet that the next 8 games, I am highly confident one of them is going to cash for you. Officially, though, I am going to play the over on 2.5 at minus 115. I think this variance chain train is going to continue to ride for Chelsea. They are full of confidence and danger men now. I do not believe in Newcastle. Guy Maurice is going to be overwhelmed in the midfield, even if he has some reinforcements back. But Almiron and Isak aren't going to help Guy Maurice all that much. He really needs Tonali and some other people back, and they ain't coming. So I think Enzo and Casado are going to overwhelm him, leading to a couple of breaks. Chelsea's good for at least 2. And then they have a hard time recently marking crosses to tall players such as Isak. So I wouldn't be surprised whatsoever if Newcastle gets one back. I like Chelsea 2-to-1, 3-to-1, something in that range, both of which clear 115 over.
Well, we're on the same side of a Chelsea bet. I can't remember what our odds of what this means for Chelsea, but I think it's been recent. I think recently it's been good. I don't know. We gotta start doing some trendy type tracking on our Chelsea synergies.
I'll talk to the producer. All right. We got Brentford 11th at 16 points versus Arsenal 3rd at 27 points. This game is Saturday at 12:30 p.m., creating a nice triple header of Premier League action. Arsenal is minus 130. Caesars has Brentford at plus 340. The draw is plus 270. Arsenal minus half a goal is minus 130. Brentford is plus 100. So I know I touted them earlier as a better title contender than Liverpool, but they also have some concerns, Brett. It seems like the clock has already run out on Havertz as people are starting to call for his head. And as much as I love Martinelli, he's got to do better with gilded edge opportunities. Like when he's one-on-one with the keeper, he can't kick it directly into their shins. Like, this is where Mo Salah is just absolutely world-class. That ball where he's coming down the wing and he's able to open up his hips and slot it past the keeper into the side net. I don't know how many of his goals have happened that way, but it seems like roughly all of them. Martinelli's got to learn that skill because he's not opening up. He's just trying to drill it past the keeper who's narrowing the angle on him. And he can have a field day if he just goes ahead and learns a little bit of Salah tape to open it up for him. Also, like Saka, he just goes invisible a little too often. So I know he's great, and I know he's everybody's golden child in England, but I have a slight bit of concern. He'll always be a year away from being a superstar instead of actually getting there. They really need all of these pieces to click, as they can't really rely on Zinchenko's scissor kicks to keep them in the title race. How are you feeling about Arsenal right now?
I mean, it's interesting that you mentioned Martinelli, because he is, and again, he's dealt with some injury stuff. He's coming back from some injuries, but he's kind of giving me some Richarlison vibes in the sense that Richarlison like exploded onto the scene in Watford, and you're like, this is the start of an ascension. And then Richarlison like never really got better from that explosion out of the scene at Watford. And I kind of am getting that we're closer to Martinelli's ceiling than maybe his age curve is suggesting. I mean, he's still good. I mean, he's still an above average Premier League winger, but I don't know if his ceiling is superstar despite the numbers that he was putting up last year in his age 21 season. And Saka, I think, is always going to be a guy that his goal scoring was outrunning his XG, shocker there. And he's always going to be, I think, more of a creative player than he is going to be like a prolific goal scorer. So he's just going to never be a guy that I think we associate like with a Mo Salah type, who's going to just run the league, score 20 goals in a season. I don't think that's who he is, but I could be wrong. He also is still very young. I mean, for the most part, though, the Arsenal's like any little dips or things that I have concerns with is just they don't have the depth. They can't withstand these lineups where they're trying to play like Jorginho and Declan Rice in the same midfield because everybody's hurt. Havertz is bombed out. He hasn't been viable for them to play. That makes injuries to the midfield or the attacking band even harder to deal with when your big money signing, who you dumped 80 million on for like to fit into one specific role, doesn't work out.
Well, it looks like they might get some relief there, Brett. Jesus started for Brazil tonight. And I just checked, he's still in the match after 70 minutes. So it looks like he'll be fit for Saturday. He's ready to return, which will give them at least some options up front. Like if they could rotate Trossard and Kedia, Martinelli, Jesus, and Saka in some way, shape, or form, then maybe that they'll be okay until one of those guys gets hurt again. And more importantly, my new Lord and Savior, Odegaard, looks like he's coming back from the concussion protocol. And if he can get Jorginho out and he's back and he's at the form he was in the first 10 matches this year, then I like them to right the ship. And it's another reason I like them over Liverpool long-term, because I think these short-term issues are starting to resolve. And as a result, I will be taking them on the money line in this game against Brentford, as Brentford has struggled against top teams. They were listless in a 3-0 loss to Poole right before the break. They also got shut out against Newcastle 1-0. They lost 1-0 to Arsenal in a cup match, lost to United 2-1. They beat Chelsea, but that was right before Chelsea started turning it around as XG came for them. So the combination of Brentford looking so bad against Liverpool, I don't know where the goals are going to come from in this match against Arsenal if Rice and Odegaard are running the midfield. And so to have only minus 130 seems like a gift for a talented Arsenal team.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. And that's mostly because I feel like Brentford was kind of, their numbers were great, but I feel like they were just overperforming their talent just from a subjective thing. I wasn't even using spreadsheets there. And I haven't really trusted them in this back four shape, which they've kind of went to. They just seemed they did a better job of preventing like really high quality shots when they were going to a back five. But that's been part of the issue with them is they're facing injuries as well. Like they're not to superstar names. Like no one's going to write home about Rico Henry being out with a long-term knee injury, but he was an important piece for what Brentford was doing. And then obviously we had questions about them replacing Ivan Toney, with the gambling thing. Oh. And then like players like Shida, who's you know, not like a great attacker by any stretch of the imagination, gets hurt. And now their depth is even shot even more. So I think Brentford's fine. Like, they're a good mid-table team. I don't think like this is like the bottom's about to fall out and they're going to crash into the relegation fight. But I don't think they were flying as high as they were at certain points during the season. And I think because of the injuries to both sides, now granted, you had mentioned that Arsenal's getting some of them back, but still, I had questions about Arsenal's depth before the injuries and Havertz bombing out. I have questions about Arsenal's depth there. So my prop bet is all about who's coming onto the pitch to end the game. And it's not people that are going to necessarily blow you away. So the second half under of 1.5 goals in this match is only -135. And given the way Arsenal play, given Brentford's lack of attacking pop off the bench, given Arsenal's lack of like credible big name subs in their own right, I really, really like that number.
Yeah, I love that because I like the under in general, and to have 1.5 in the second half without impact subs. That is excellent analysis. Way to go, Brad. I like that one.
I get one right, man. Thanks for getting it.
Well, we'll see. The gambling gods will determine it, not me. If I had the power to determine if you're right beforehand, I'd be a whole lot richer. I am going with Arsenal to win 2-0 for +200 for a lot of the reasons that we already talked about. Brentford has not been good against top squads. Arsenal is getting these players back. And if they have Rice, even without Ben White, if Ben White isn't able to make it back, like, they still have a really solid defense. And it might be 1-0, it might be 2-0. But I feel better about Brentford being held to zero than I feel about Brentford being scoring. And to juice that line up to +200 is pretty good value for what you're getting.
Yeah, I like it, man. So Let's ride. Let's win some money off this match. I think we both feel fairly confident on this one. I don't know. I feel it's probably a bad thing.
That's really dangerous. That's really dangerous. But I mean, like, when Brentford can't score against an Endo Gakpo midfield when they're playing a 3-5-2, it's hard not to feel confident going into the next match. Anyway, Tottenham, fourth, 26 points versus Aston Villa, fifth at 25 points. Another banger. This one is Sunday at 9 a.m. Caesars has Spurs at +130. Villa is +180. The draw is +270. Spurs minus half a goal is +120. Villa is -150. I'm just going to say it. It feels so good. It's just been building in me and building in me and building in me. I got to let it go, Brett. Fade Spurs! Are you serious right now with this crap that they're rolling out? They were only able to get 6 shots off last week. Basuma is still suspended. Madison is hurt. Richarlison is still out. Van de Ven is out. The team they are playing is absolutely atrocious right now. And Villa is not so bad that they should be a +180 dog to the ghost of the Spurs in this matchup. And you also need to forget about Snoop, Brett. The Spurs need to give up smoke as their line continues to be way too freaking high. It is suicide to keep doing it in critical situation, and it's going to kill their season. Losing to Wolves is bad enough without doing it to yourself. They look terrible the entire game, and if the goal was 48 feet wide, they would have lost by 100 as the Wolves sprayed balls hilariously wide time after time on good chances, so they had no clinical anomaly whatsoever. And then you play like a top-of-the-box line in the 96th minute where a well-timed run finishes you off? Are you serious? Are you serious, Spurs? Like, you just lost the Wolves 2-1, and now you're going to be favored against Villa? I am fading the hell out of you.
Well, you and me both, man. I'm taking the Villa money line, and it's mostly because there's a world where if Villa had a little bit more luck in their own finishing, they would be at the top of the league because, Toby, guess who has the 6th best underlying numbers in the Premier League right now? Aston Villa. They're actually ahead of Spurs in terms of their underlying numbers, their XG differential per 90. And Unai Emery has done an awesome job with this team. I mean, I am not super sold on the players, but he has made it work. He has turned Ollie Watkins into a legitimate top-tier Premier League striker. Ollie Watkins, by the way, my anytime scorer bet at +178 against the Spurs. Insane high line with Watkins' movement and the way that Villa plays seem like a dangerous matchup there. But this Villa team is good. Like, this Villa team is legitimately, like, if Spurs had not gotten off into this insane start, they would be neck and neck, probably battling now for 6-7 right now. And so
way less. Way less. Like, the only thing that's saving them is bank points. And like, I don't see how they're going to survive the Madison injury. I don't see it without that creativity in midfield and the holiday fixture congestion coming. They're gonna have to play what, another 7 or 8 matches without him, maybe even more. Like, they might be into match day like 21, 22 by he comes back. And yes, they've banked a lot of points, but they might only take whatever for the next 10 matches, they might only take 10 points or less. And if they only have 36 halfway through the year, they're looking at, you know, 6-7 much more than they're looking at being at the top of the table. That's why I laughed when you said they were a city contender, because I think they're about to fall off a cliff, and I am fading them the whole way down.
I was simply saying, if they continue to ride with this horseshoe up their butt, they can continue to do this. They could be up there on their base on their point total. But yeah, I mean, this is definitely a team. I thought I had one more match, because I, if you remember, I actually took the money line against Wolves for Spurs, and it was looking good until the 290 and then the goals from Wolves. That's one way to lose a bet, I'll tell you that way.
Man, but that first goal was so sweet. That first goal was worth losing a bet, where he like controlled it to himself and then volleyed into the near post. That was beautiful.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, I'm with you, man. This seems like a recipe for them to drop a little bit. We were kind of waiting for the rug to be pulled out from under them anyways, just based on them just exceeding the chances that they were creating. But now it really seems like it's just destiny for them to plummet. And this, they're catching a Villa team that I think is legit. I like this team. I enjoy watching this team. I am impressed with what Unai Emery is doing. I think managers in some ways have certain levels that they find. I don't think he's a guy that could turn a top club into an overperforming machine up that way, but he can definitely do some damage with a club like Villa, and he is.
Zero practicality whatsoever. Zero. Playing essentially an offside trap in your own final third in the 96th minute of a tie game. Like, I don't. And that's after playing the high line with down two men against a $1 billion squad in Chelsea. Like, I'm fading the hell. I mean, it might be entertaining. It might be a car crash that we all get to watch, but I'm going to make money gambling on it, like a demolition derby. This is going to be awesome. I'm signing up for the county fair, and I'm making book. And on the prop side, Villa games also feature a lot of goals. Like, I don't know what's going to happen in this match with what Ange is doing and what Emery is doing. So I am all over the prop market. I'm just going to give out a bunch. You figure out which one you like the most. Villa win, both score, plus 340, super tasty. Villa keeps a clean sheet. So because they don't have Madison and because they have no midfield whatsoever, they don't have any way to spring Sun. And without being able to spring Sun, they're just relying on Kulishevsky to pull something out of thin air. So Villa to keep a clean sheet is plus 400. Because of Tottenham's past numbers, you're getting excellent value there. Aston Villa over 1.5 goals themselves, even money, plus 100. Villa minus 1.5. Adjust it up. Forget the money line. Go ahead and take that up. Plus 400, and then Aston Villa money line and a goal to happen in the match in both halves, plus 290, Brett. That one is super tasty.
Wow. You are on fire. And if you are not just throwing down hard on this Villa match, I'm going to be really disappointed in you. You got to get those bets flowing, buddy. You are jazzed up for this one. This one seems ripe for Toby Mergler to pay off his mortgage.
I don't need a 5 pints. I need a 12 pack for this match, because I am loading up. Anyway, all right. I did promise at the top of the show that we had another top of the table matchup to talk about. So we're going abroad yet again right after this break, down to Italy, where the Juventus is playing Inter in a match of 1-2 in the table. All right, Brett, time to head back to Italy, a beautiful form of soccer with competitive teams that I really have grown to love in the last 3 or 4 years after being a casual fan for a long time. I like tuning in a little bit more often now, particularly with the number of Americans that are down there. I encourage everybody to do the same. And if you're going to tune in, you might as well tune in for the two best teams, at least on current form, and that is Juventus, second at 29 points versus Inter, first at 31 points. This game is Sunday at 2:45 p.m. They play them a little later in Italy. Inter is plus 120. Juventus is plus 230. The draw is plus 230. Caesar says Inter minus half a goal at plus 115 and Juventus at minus 145. So, Brett, we've talked about both of these teams. It's different points in our study abroad segment. Do you want to catch everybody up on their current form?
Inter, still good. That's the easy way to catch you up on them. Juventus has been the surprise, though. This has been a team that I don't think many people saw as challenging for a Serie A title. But they have. I mean, they've been up there all season long. Their underlying numbers are strong. But with both of these teams, it's the same question. If anybody would even recalls when we were talking about Inter the last time they were here, I didn't know what to think of them because they haven't played anybody. And guess what? That goes double for Juventus because they don't even have a European competition this year. So each of these teams has played AC Milan, which is like literally the only measuring stick that we have as far as them matching up against good teams. But other than that, for Juventus, it's been like Bologna, Empoli, Lazio, who's bad now, Lecce, Torino, Udinese, like none of these teams are good. Most of these teams would be closer to Luton Town than they would be to like Brentford in the Premier League. And so it's hard to tell if like this is just them avoiding the other top teams and having a pretty good result against Milan. And so, you know, their numbers look more impressive than they are and they're kind of paper tigers. Or maybe this is just the sign of a good team taking care of business. I don't know. It's very, very hard to tell. I am way more bullish on Inter, which like might as well get to it, is why I'm taking the Inter money line at plus 120. They still have the same questions, but at least they're playing some Champions League matches. At least the talent matches their production. I mean, this is a good, talented team. I mean, they have Lautaro Martinez, who is one of the best strikers in the world. Their midfield led by Barella is fantastic. I think getting Benjamin Pavard to play as like a right center back in their back three was an excellent under the radar signing this summer. And I mean, guys like Federico DiMarco, whose boy band looks, you know, kind of take away from the fact that he's been really productive as a left wing back. And Denzel Dumfries.
Did you see his goal last week? Did you see that goal?
Yeah,
please, anybody who's listening to me right now, go ahead and hit pause and search DeMarco goal. He scored from just inside his own half last week with an inch perfect shot that I don't know if he meant it, but if he did, it should be on every highlight video for the rest of the year.
Yeah, and I mean, the other guy that we haven't even mentioned is Calhanoglu, who's 5 for 5 converting penalties. And yeah, I mean, they're penalties and you should be converting them at least 75% of the time, but there are guys that are pretty good at taking him. And again, we haven't mentioned one of their biggest signing, who I'm a huge fan on, and it's Marcus Thuram, who's been really good for them. This is a good team with good players. When I look at Juventus, I don't get the same thing. Like the way their pieces are adding up caused me a lot more skepticism. Like Vlahovic has been a name that's been rumored around your club, Chelsea, for a while, but like his production has never matched up. Like if you're talking about a guy that maybe epitomized like a possible paper tiger Juventus club, it's Vlahovic. Like that's the guy that it's like the perfect matchup. This striker who's gotten a ton of smoke for being like the next big international guy. He has 4 goals this year and 2 of them are from penalty, or sorry, 1 of them is from penalties. He missed one. Like that is not the mark of a superstar striker. And I like some of the players that are on this team. Like I like Locatelli and Rabio and Chisia. Like those guys are good players. Like they're fine, but like, are they good enough players to be challenging for a Serie A title, given the strength of Napoli, given the strength of Inter, given what we've seen from AC Milan at certain points? I don't think so. So the fact that Inter is plus money in this matchup just seems like it's like one of those things where I'm like, where's the trap? Like, what is
happening? I don't think they're good enough. I don't think they're good enough to challenge for the title. I do think they're good enough to challenge in a single game. And both of these teams are absolutely on fire, having each won their last five, and neither have lost since September. And if you look at some of those underlying numbers, like Inter leads Serie A both in goals scored and fewest goals conceded thus far, which is super impressive, of course. But Juve is second in goals conceded and seventh in goals scored. So the defensive side, which is where they've always made their mark, they're continue to be reborn. I mean, they do lack a little bit of attacking flair, and they're struggling a little bit to score from open play. They're relying more on set pieces to generate goals this year. They also lead the league in big chances missed, which is not something that you want to lead the league in. As a Chelsea fan, I'm way too familiar with that. So I do think some reversion is likely coming over the long term. But as you watch them, I can see how they can hold a team like Inter for one game. So I think it's going to be hard for either team to find separation in this particular match, especially with Juve at home playing in that tight stadium, which is unusual in Italy to a certain degree. Like, the fans are right on top of them, giving a little bit of an extra edge, which we've seen as they've reeled off title after title over the years. And I think if they can find some way, Brett, to score a single goal, I think Inter will struggle to get two, as Juve just chokes the life out of the game. So as such, I'm actually going Juve on the double chance at minus 145, as I like those odds a lot. If I don't like Inter to get to two, I'm essentially getting minus 145 for them not to lose 1-0.
Well, we're kind of in the same vein then in our prop bet, because mine is both score no at minus.
So is mine.
Oh, okay. Well, all right. Well, we're definitely on the same vein yet. Yeah. I mean, this definitely seems like a match that seems like 1-0, 2-0 dominate the score lines here, or even a 0-0 draw is definitely in play. So just the betting on the fact that there's going to be a zero at the end of someone's scoreline seems like a good play in this one.
Yeah. I mean, essentially, Juve is a threat to hold any team in the world scoreless, and they're also a threat to fail to score against any team in the world. As such, I like my odds quite a bit here that one of those will come true yet again, and to get it at a coin flip at minus 115 feels great. So much so that I think you'll see that again in my five pint. So, Brett, you are winning the five-point challenge right now for November, 11.5 to 9.3. Somehow, Nunez kept having shot after shot be ruled off for offsides, which kept me from cashing that bet and taking the lead, which was super annoying. But I do like this slate. I think I'm seeing it pretty cleanly, and I like my chances to beat you. I think this is actually our last match day in November. So I'm going to go with four bets. Then one conditional bet just based on lineup, since we are taping this so early in the week. I'm going to take Chelsea's money line at plus 165. I'm going to take Arsenal's money line at minus 130. I'm going to take that Juve Inter both score no at minus 115. Then I'm going to have some fun. I am taking the Villa money line plus a goal in both halves at plus 290, Brett. That number is just too great to ignore. And then I'm going to take the City money line as long as Haaland's in the lineup. If Haaland's out, then I am backing off of that bet, and you could replace it with the Chelsea Newcastle over.
All right. Well, we are actually going to match up on one, because my five pint also had the Inter Juve minus 115 on both the score. No, it actually also has the Chelsea plus 165 money line. So we're really going at three.
I don't like that.
We're really at three bets here, and mine are going to be basically I'm back in the Villa train. I'm taking Aston Villa on the money line plus 180. I'm taking Ollie Watkins as an anytime goal scorer at plus 178. But then here it comes, Toby. Here it comes. Liverpool to lead at half but not win the game plus 750. Throwing it out there. It's in the five pint. It was not until you goaded me into it in the middle of the show. And then I made some little X's on my sheet and circled that one instead. So that is in there, plus 750. Let's ride out on a high on November right here.
I wish you the best of luck. I am personally thankful that you put it in there, which is appropriate for Thanksgiving.
Like Martin McFly, when you call me chicken, I just go for it. Just take the bait.
So here at the network, we are going to take Thursday and Friday off. So we're jamming a lot into the first part of the week. We are giving you Covered in Glory wildly early, but we also gave you I'm sorry, waiver wired and lemon pepper parlay. Both of those released today. You still got Hench on -3. Hench still hates referees. Spoiler alert. So go ahead and give that yet another listen. And you're getting two editions of the 15-minute pregame show. You're getting a 3-minute special edition for Thanksgiving. And then the full 15 will be released on Friday, even though we've already recorded it. We also are doing a tournament of champions on Trendy. If you're not tired of me yet, where the first three people who beat me are back to try to beat me again. And Eddie Spaghetti, Dave Damashek, and Martin Weiss. The first episode was a lot of fun with a lot of winners in it. A lot of winners in it in the first one. We'll try to do it again tomorrow. So that is all for our show. We hope you enjoy a pretty great soccer match days on Saturday and Sunday. Brett, I'm very thankful for you. I'm thankful for everybody who can listen. I hope that you guys spend a wonderful time with your friends and family over the holiday. Anything you want to say you're thankful for, Brett, even though I already took the low-hanging fruit of our listeners and my co-hosts.
I am thankful for being allowed to produce Lemon Pepper today, because it happened to be on the day where Martin Weiss found out that Mark Gunnell's tweet about the Kansas City Chiefs receiving core being the deepest, possibly being the deepest they've ever been, got retweeted today by Freezing Cold Takes. Weiss was able to see that before they recorded. So go check out Lemon Pepper Parlay. Martin has a lot of fun with Mark on that one. Mark, oh man, that was ice. That is ice. That is an ice cold take. That tweet did not age well.
Yeah, you got to take the L on that one, Mark. All right, well, we hope you don't take a lot of L's this weekend. Follow our bets. I think Brett and I are both feeling pretty good, or fade us, whatever you're feeling. But I like this slate of games, and I feel good about our analysis today. So thank you very much for listening, and we will be back next week with our usual interchange of horrible advice backed by expert analysis. Take care, everyone.